Blog Talk Radio.
So when I say, as the subtitle of my book, that I think religion poisons everything, I'm not just doing what publishers like and coming up with a provocative subtitle. I mean to say it infests us in our most basic integrity. It says we can't be moral without Big Brother, without a totalitarian permission. It means we can't be good to one another. We can't think without this. We must be afraid. We must also be forced to love someone who we fear. The essence of sadomasochism. All of this could be part of a plan. There is no way an atheist can prove it's not. But it's some plan, isn't it? With mass destruction, pitiless extermination, annihilation going on all the time, and all of this set in motion on a scale that's absolutely beyond our imagination, in order that the Pope can tell people not to jerk off.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome to The Pink Atheist. I'm your host, Rachel Johnson, and welcome, and thank you for joining me today. What we're going to be talking today about is GMOs, and I know there's a lot of hype and controversy about GMO, and people have a lot of extreme fears. I want to get started by saying that, you know, I am pro-GMO, which is a stance that, you know, we understand that people who are anti-GMO are very hard to convince differently about their thinking, whether it be rational or irrational. And a lot of what I hear out there is about Roundup and some of the chemicals that people believe are going into GMO, some of the genes, and problems with cancer, issues of that nature. And so I wanted to address those because I know that, one, I'm not already a scientist, I'm still studying, but I know that a lot of people are miseducated, they're misinformed, and they see a lot of websites on the internet, and they see a lot of misinformation, and they become terrified of these things, and they don't even want to approach the subject because they think, oh, it's going to be a disaster, they're trying to give us cancer, they're trying to harm us with these horrific things that they're doing in laboratories. And people sometimes phrase it as akin to, you know, modifying humans or splicing the genes of an animal and a human together, or hybridization in that form. And it's really not. It's a highly intense process. It takes a lot of understanding of genetics. It takes a lot of understanding of the dynamics of what does and doesn't coalesce. And this, audience, is an important topic because as we go into the future, and we've already started to see the ramifications of global warming. So we really need to understand what we're looking at on a global scale of the future of our agriculture. And that agriculture that has been with us for at least 12,000 years has become so vitally important to our existence. We have about 14,000 plus people per day who starve to death on this planet. And that is an astounding number. And you know what? The intent of scientists going into this was to say, let's stop this. Let's create something where in these places that humans live, these plants can survive the most disastrous of territory. And, you know, they can still feed these people who live there. And, you know, I know as human beings, we have a lot of questions and we have a lot of concerns. And I want to say to you that science has taken a lot of time and intensive study in this just to understand what happens when they do create a hybrid or what we call GMO. And when it comes to your personal garden, and you've probably heard this all before, you've probably heard about the fact that we have changed plants. And so I want to explain to you what the difference is between GMO and what happens in your personal private gardening life and how those two are quite intellectually similar. GMO is the genetic modification of an organism. It is literally taking out certain genes and putting in other genes. And so let's take, for instance, corn. Corn is a pretty hardy plant, but it also requires a lot of water and moderate temperature and things like that. It's been grown in North America for thousands of years, and it was first a tiny weed-looking plant. Now, through, you know, GMO, the natural garden way, we have modified it from being tiny little kernels, which look more like weeds, to modern corn, and that is fantastic. But we have to recognize that there are parasites and there are bacteria that, you know, their whole scope of living is feeding off of the same things that we do. We share this planet with millions of organisms. And along the way, where we have adapted these corn to become bigger, better, juicier, different colors, different sizes, different types, those organisms have as well stayed the course with us and have adapted themselves. Now, this is the problem. What people are terrified of is the glycophosphates in Roundup. And they say that, oh, you know, that they're putting these genes in there that produce glycophosphates, cancerous. And in natural grown corn, you know, you have to do something. So for years, people put the Roundup on there. They put those glycophosphates all over our agriculturally grown plants. And that's important, because if we hadn't done that, if we hadn't discovered that there are certain chemicals that these insects and bacteria can't survive with them in their environment, we wouldn't have the crops that we have today. Thanks to our agricultural revolution, we have literally countries of entire people who are very healthy, who are growing taller, stronger, all of that. And historical agriculture, which is, you know, your grandmother's garden, her grandmother's garden, had such a significance on that, because when people first started agriculture, it was very difficult to get the right amounts of nutrition. So those people didn't live as long. They didn't, you know, suffer the amalgam of diseases that we do, but they also starved more. They also had to face higher difficulty in getting enough nutrition of the right proportions. And thanks to modern agriculture and, you know, the growth of these crops, we have been able to get rid of a lot of that starvation, get rid of a lot of those problems. But we haven't been able to get rid of the pests, of the bacteria that are living on these same things that we share. If you go out to anybody's ordinary garden and they aren't using any pesticides and they don't have any other means, you will see that within 1 to 2 years of starting a garden, you will have the same amount of pests that another person who's been gardening for a few years is. And the problem is it's accumulative. So this year you might lose one or two of your plants, but the next year you might lose half of your crop. And that's why we moved to these glycophosphate having Roundups. And then science said, well, what if there was a gene that could express something similar to this? And now you have to understand, science had just got this done. Science had just spliced in the genes which help produce these chemicals which are similar to a glycophosphate, and already the insects have caught up. Already they have adapted. Because one of the things that happens when we do this is those who are the most resistant survive. So if I can eat something and I'll only get a little sick, but you eat something and you're going to die, I'm the survivor. My offspring are going to possibly have the genes which will make them a little less sick, and then their offspring might have genes which make them completely immune to it. So what has had to happen and what will have to happen is we have to stay ahead of this. It's either that or we have to use these very problematic chemicals and continue to use them in a way that could be more detrimental. What science did is they went into the laboratory, they looked at all the genes, they looked at what could express similar properties to these chemicals. And now you have to understand that the animal kingdom is all related. We share so many similar genes with so many various species. And that's important because when we're talking about science can take the genes from a frog or whatever else you want to say and insert them into a plant and that gene sticks and those create, you know, pest-resistant products. That's not scary to me because I already understand that, one, they're putting in nonsense genes, which means that those genes really don't code for anything. They don't make any specific genetic issues. They have to insert a certain amount to occupy space. Well, the significant genes that they're going for is the genes that produce the chemical. And then they have to link those on something. So they do. They take nonsense genes out of other species and they place them in there. And it's not problematic because what their own system can't make sense out of, because we probably don't share that similar genetic strand, it doesn't code for anything in us. Besides that, we are ingesting that. And that food, when it goes into our stomach, is hitting acid, which stomach acid is a 2 on the pH level. And what that means is it's so acidic, it burns up most of what goes into it. It immediately starts breaking down proteins. It starts breaking down food. And anybody who understands that, that's what the stomach does. And there is a reason behind that. The body has protective elements in place to prevent us from just accepting blindly other strands of DNA. That's why if you put somebody's organ into another person, our body immediately begins to react and try to reject it, because we do have systems in place to prevent us from, you know, accepting non-human, non-us DNA. But anyhow, back to the laboratory. So scientists not only have to work out how this happens, what they're inserting, but they also have to work out the importance of the survival of the plant. And this takes rigorous testing. And when I say rigorous testing, I mean years and years and years. And then they have to go and they have to prove to the FDA that this is harmless to humans. They have to show them study after study that they have tested it on laboratory animals, that they have proven over and over that, one, it creates a successful crop. Two, the crop isn't in some way mutated that it's going to not survive or be a lesser plant than what the farmer potentially has access to. Because we're talking about farmers whose best interest is that they grow their crops and then they have a successful year. And then they have to prove that most of all, it's safe for human consumption. Those are a lot of rigorous tests. That's a lot of access to important data. And the government has the regulation of that. They can at any time say, no, you haven't proven that this is efficient enough that we can release this to the general population. And so a lot of products that you see that are currently being sold that are GMO have gone through these rigors. Now, another problem that people have, and I would concur with you wholeheartedly here, is that Monsanto itself. I've heard about the Monsanto lawsuits, and particularly one about Monsanto seeds falling into another farm or, you know, pollinating another farm's crop and them having, you know, a crossbreed. I want to say that, one, to believe that you can control nature to the point that you want to sue somebody over where your pollen lands is astoundingly ignorant. Monsanto wants, you know, to corner the market, and I don't believe that they should, but more so is that it's laughable to think that you can plant corn anywhere close to other corn, and those two corns are going to say, oh no, I can't accept your pollen you're Monsanto. It's literally not possible. And Monsanto is going to have to give in here. If they want their corn out there, if they want it next to corn that isn't Monsanto, it's going to have the situation where the likelihood is nature will occur. You can't control where the bees fly. You can't control where the wind goes. It just happens. It's unethical to believe that you have the right to co-opt what people are growing, and especially because of what happened. Within a couple years, insects showed that they had already become immune to the new genetically modified crops. So really, what we have here is it's going to be a continued problem, and we're going to have to race against time. In places like Africa, where they have bread crops that are so hardy that they can survive, you know, a complete dry period, which they have several months of, that is astounding. For places like there, I think that that is a great idea. And I know that Bill Gates has been helping in Africa with said kinds of agriculture. But there's really not anything to be terrified of. And it's irrational for us to think that scientists would go into the laboratory and attempt to give us cancer, attempt to mutate things in such a way that it harms human beings, because that's not the intent or the notion of science at all. You know, we have to be cautious. We have to be curious. And science has to follow a body of ethics. And I know that people think, oh, well, you're just saying that. They really don't. What if they can pay their way around this? Well, see, the great thing about science is it's always, always self-regulating. So one example is the man who made up the study at the CDC saying that there was a link between vaccines and autism. And later, when he recanted, he lost his credentials. He lost his job. He will never, 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 never work in science again. And that's important, because that's what science does. Science has become a self-regulating body where if you are found to have been lying, misleading, or completely unethical about your study, you are out on your butt, and you will not be working in science in any time in the future at all, ever. And that is harsh, but it is great. Because in history, you know, I know that there was a lot of unethical things that happened on the way to here. But we had to learn and grow. And ethics is something that takes time. And, you know, I would never want to see science being like religion, where it just sits on its thumbs and it never alters its thinking. It never changes what is acceptable. So understand that science has regulatory means in place for important reasons. Now, it may seem like it's a boring, long topic to talk about, but it's important for you, because your future is that you are going to start seeing more GMO. We're going to have to be able to produce more crops as there are more humans on the planet. We're going to have to sustain more lives. We're going to have to fight against hardier and hardier bugs and bacteria. We're in an eternal race with evolution. And this is just more proof that evolution exists, because the more that we adapt our plants or ourselves or anything, the more that those insects or bacteria adapt along with us. And what happens, the outcome is that we continually have to keep up or get ahead. Because if we don't, the problem is that we're going to head backward towards that time before agriculture where we had to work very hard for our food. And trust me, that's like Dole right now. Dole bananas, I believe it is. They are having such a horrendous problem with their bananas, because 3/4 of their crop, and these are the actual trees that produce the bananas, have been devastated by this blight. GMO would be a great thing right there. But people are afraid. But it could save that crop because the blight that is on it, the trees have zero immunity to this. It is just ripping through them. And in fact, science is saying that, look, if we don't do something, these bananas, this particular strain of bananas is going to go extinct. And what happened there is an important factoid of history. We know that in South America, those were discovered by humans. We know that over time, they were agriculturally altered by human beings, by us caretaking them. That bananas went from about the size of maybe your first finger to the size that they are currently, which is twice as big. And if you've ever seen a plantain, which is just a little bit bigger than a banana, but not as sweet, you'll understand what we us humans did. It's sort of like the apple. The apple came from the mountains in Italy. It was very small and very sour, and we have altered it to be this huge, crunchy, fantastically sweet, wonderful thing that everybody enjoys. That's what we do. That's what we have done. But the thing that we can't do, just naturally, always, is save those plants from what adapts along with them. See, as they adapt and get bigger, so do the organisms that feed off of them, which is currently like that blight that's killing those banana plants. That blight feeds specifically on those bananas, and it is attacking them because what's best for it is its survival. Unfortunately, these are not conscious entities. These are not thinking beings. You know, insects or bacteria, they don't think about what they're doing. So if they cause an extinction, it's not because they thought about it, unlike us humans. It's because what was best for them was that they grow and reproduce and survive. Now, here's the problem. Say that all of those banana plants do go extinct. And we have other lines of bananas that are a little bit different. And that blight can only somewhat affect them. Well, the problem becomes that in 20 years from now, that blight can change itself enough that it can not only similarly affect them, but can devastate the next crop. Because that's what happens. So when it comes to GMOs, we have to be ready. We have to be okay with the potential to use this technology. And it's going to have to continue to keep up. The race will never be over. It's never going to be done because evolution doesn't stop. Evolution just hits a wall and takes a new course and hits a wall and takes a new course. That's how we are here today, because when the dinosaurs went extinct, mammals had free range to take a new a new way forward. And that's how we have the diversity of mammals today. And that's what happens all over the world. But the problem is, can we afford to let things go extinct? No. Can we afford to just let them hit that barrier wall? No, because these are crops that we have maintained for thousands of years that have been used to sustain us and to sustain our healthiness. So if we start letting our crops go extinct because they're not naturally fit to outrace the parasites or the bacteria that want to feed on them, then what happens is we have to alter our diets drastically. And imagine if tomorrow you woke up and there was no corn, and there were no bananas, and there were several other species of plants that weren't available. Think about what you would do, what you would be eating, what would take the place of some major staples. Just like the potato famine in Ireland, during that period there was a blight that was on the potatoes and they could not, for the life of them, grow potatoes. Thousands of people died. Potatoes are a main staple. They were literally saving the lives of almost all of Ireland. And so when this happened, those with the most access to other foods survived, and those with little or no access to other foods perished. And that's not what we want for humanity. And when it comes to cancer, let's address the situation. I've said it before and I'll say it again. We're living longer than we ever did in history, which, hurrah, that's a wonderful thing. Are we getting cancer? Unfortunately so. And I feel like people think that I'm being cruel when I say, if you roll the dice enough times, you're going to get snake eyes. And it sucks. I hate saying that, but it's the reality of the situation, that if you live long enough, you're probably going to get it, unless you're one of the lucky ones. And we need to start seeing life from the real perspective, where it's unfortunate, but this is what goes on. You know, we don't have an endless time here. We don't have a suffer-free time here. There's never going to be the perfect built body. We have to deal with what we were given. You know, each of us, when we were made, literally, when the egg met the sperm, and you became a blastula, and then a gastula, you had up to and right around 300 errors in your body, okay? So 300 errors to the original DNA that existed. That means that in those 300 errors, something somewhere is not going to turn out right. And every child, every offspring, that every single one, this is how we have blue eyes, green eyes, hazel eyes, brown eyes, and black eyes. This is how we have all the differentiation in hair colors, in skin colors, all of that. Because those errors, which we later call mutations, arise in our gametes, in our offspring. And they are perfectly natural. So, unfortunately, is cancer and tumors. And I hate saying that. Let me reiterate how much I hate cancer. Because I've seen it devastate lives in ways that is horrible. You know, I've been on the cancer floor of Akron Children's Hospital, and I watched a little boy, and he had a hemoblastoma. It was behind his stomach, and it was attached to a blood vessel along his spine. And this little boy, unfortunately, didn't survive. He got cancer at age 5, and he passed away at age 7. So when I talk to you about understanding the ramifications of this, I talk to you from a perspective of I've seen it. I saw many of those little children up there on the floor, and I heard their cries and, you know, the suffering that they were going through. And I watched this little boy go through some terrible things that I would never wish on anyone. And when I say to you that, unfortunately, a certain percentage of our population is going to have cancer, I say that with the hope that one day we can eradicate that from our population and no longer have that kind of suffering. But it is inevitable. And I don't believe that scientists would go into the laboratory and add these genes, which can produce something similar to glycophosphate or glycophosphate, with the intent to cause cancer. Now, my understanding is that this is in the plant. It's not something that it's meant for people to, like, consume a quantity of it that is actually going to do them damage. So when the people are consuming these foods, I don't suspect that science would intentionally harm people, knowing what, you know, the potential outcome is. We used to use so much of this glycophosphate, and a byproduct of that is estrogen. When the Roundup goes into, you know, the water, what happens is, chemically, that's what they found, which is why also science wants to move away from using, you know, these liquid pesticides, because they want to keep the population from suffering the consequences, and they want to keep the nature around us safe from suffering these consequences. So if the plant is expressing this, but it's not, you know, being spread all over throughout nature, then what we can do is prevent the problem with this leaching into your water systems, leaching into your lakes, creeks, and things like that. And perhaps we can, you know, give people the advantage of healthier plants with less of these potentially harmful chemicals. And you know, when people use the irrational ideology of science and harm on me, I think to an era before science came into its modern enlightenment, and that is the days of Louis Pasteur. He very much went in believing that there was spontaneous generation. During his era, people were dying of cholera, various other diseases, and rabies was outrageous. It was on the rise. And I think to when people, and during that era, people didn't survive past their 40s. And then when I look at people being snobbish about modern technology and saying, oh, they're just trying to kill us, they're trying to give us cancer, blah, 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 you realize what history was. History was you were going to make it to 40 at best, and you were going to die, period, if you got there at all. 3/4 of the European population died from one disease. They did not have the sanitary conditions. They did not have the nutritious conditions. They did not have any of the conditions we do today. Unfortunately, the price that we pay for surviving longer, for living healthier, is that we have to make a little bit of sacrifices at times to various venues around us. And I'm not saying that scientists want us to sacrifice health tomorrow for, you know, eating a fat meal today. That's not what's happening. Scientists are trying to make things as safe as possible for you while being able to help those crops survive to tomorrow and outrun those bacteria and those parasites in the arms race of evolution. GMOs are not really that scary because we share so many similar genes. And what scientists are using are non-coding strands. They don't code. They just sit there. All they are is helpers. They help insert those genes into the plant. Other than that, they do nothing. So it doesn't matter where they got them from. They could get those genes from your grandpa. It doesn't matter because they aren't doing anything. They're just sitting there. What is coding is the important parts that the scientists were going for. And it is hard to do that. I can tell you that because I've seen DNA. I've done the protein analysis in the laboratory, and I can tell you that DNA is very, 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 very tiny. So if you want to insert a couple genes, you better be prepared with a strand that's bigger than that, because a couple of genes is something you're not going to see with your bare eyes ever. And even a strand is going to not be something you're going to see with your bare eyes. So you have to have the electron microscopes, and you have to do a lot of hurdles and enzymes and cutting and restricting, and it's all boring, and you wouldn't really want to do it day after day. But these people go into the laboratory, and they do it year after year after year after year, testing and through rigors, until they can give you a product that the government itself says, okay, that's safe enough that we can release it. When it comes to GMO, all the hype is just that. It's just hype. And I'm proud to not be afraid of GMO because I know that thanks to modern technology and modern science and modern medicine, I'm going to live longer than my great-great-grandparents did. And I'm going to live healthier. So I'm going to wrap it up with this. You're free to believe whatever you want, but believing the truth is better. So if you want to understand about it, might I suggest that you go to NCBI, which is the government website where they contain all of the studies and research on these plants. You'll look up the organism that you're thinking that it's horrible that they're using GMO on, and you research who's doing the research. Where are they doing the research? Why are they doing the research? Ask yourself the questions and be open-minded enough to get the real answers. If you're just reading a blog on the web and you're believing somebody's advice, you're taking the chance that you're being misinformed, and you're taking the chance that you will never be truly informed enough to understand what is best for you. So, and that should be across the board for everything, trust me. But anyhow, that's going to do it for us today. And I know that my lecture was probably a little boring in the middle, but I hope that you enjoyed it enough that you get a little curious, go looking, and find out what you need so that you can understand GMOs. Thanks for joining me, everyone. Goodbye.